Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and in the next half-hour segment, we're going to once again update some information dealing with the recently concluded war in Yugoslavia, or at least hopefully recently concluded war in Yugoslavia. In the United States, at least, there has not been a great deal of coverage of the damage that has been done to Serbia and Yugoslavia. There's been a lot of coverage of atrocities real and alleged against the Albanian ethnic majority in Kosovo. My coverage of the war is not to be in any way misinterpreted as excusing the atrocities the Serbs have committed or any sort of atrocity, but the fact of the matter is that the Serbs did not start this war, and in the series of Balkans wars that has followed on the destabilization of Yugoslavia in the late 80s and early 90s, the Serbs, although they've committed plenty of evils and plenty of atrocities, are not the aggressors, they are the victims. And in the United States, we have not heard much about the damage that has been done to Serbia and Yugoslavia by the NATO bombing. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience who got this from the Green Left Weekly, and despite the obvious ideological bias of this particular website and publication, I would note that they quote at length from mainstream publications, including one very long and haunting article from the London Times, not only a very respected but a relatively conservative news source. This is from the Green Left Weekly that was posted on May 19th of 1999. It's number 361. The website, www.peg.apc.org. That's peg.apc.org. One more time, greenleft, greenleft, one word, at peg.apc.org. It's an article by Mitchell Cohen, and its headline, NATO Bombs Cause Environmental Disaster. It reads as follows. Early in April, a leader of the Yugoslavian Green Party warned that NATO missiles were beginning to contaminate the water supply for much of Eastern Europe. Quote, I warn you that Serbia is one of the greatest sources of underground waters in Europe, and that the contamination will be felt in the whole surrounding area all the way to the Black Sea, Branka Jovanovic reported from Belgrade. Her worst fears have apparently come true. On the first day of the NATO airstrikes, March 24th, the municipality of Groka, G-R-O-C-K-A, was hit where the Vinča nuclear reactor is situated. The site contains a great stockpile of nuclear waste. No U.S. media reported this. The municipality of Pančevo was hit, in which the petrochemical factory and a factory for the production of artificial fertilizers are situated. They were bombed again 2 weeks later. By the way, I am undoubtedly mispronouncing many of these names. My Balkan pronunciation is undoubtedly somewhat skewed for obvious reasons. Continuing. The municipality of Boric was also hit. Boric, B-A-R-I-C, houses a large complex for the production of chloride using Bhopal technology. Quote, it is not necessary for me to explain what the blowing up of one of such factories would represent, unquote, Jovanovic said, again quoting, not only Belgrade, which is situated at a distance of 10 kilometers, but the rest of Europe would be endangered, unquote. On the second day of bombing, a chemical factory in the Belgrade suburb of Sremica was bombed. Also hit was a rocket fuel storage area, causing releases into the surrounding area and water. Jovanovic also reports that four national parks were bombed, and that the depleted uranium weaponry first used against Iraq, responsible for thousands of cases of leukemia and other cancers in children, is now being used against Yugoslavia. In the U.S., the news is well scrubbed so that no blood leaks. NATO bombers were told continue to hit and cripple Yugoslavia's oil refineries. Compare that to the detailed story filed by Tom Walker, reporting from Belgrade for the London Times on April 19th. Quote, again, note this comes from the London Times of 4/19. A towering cloud of toxic gases looms over Belgrade after warplanes on the 25th night of the NATO onslaught hit a petrochemicals plant in the northern outskirts of the city. An ecological disaster was unfolding yesterday after NATO bombed a combined petrochemicals, fertilizer, and refinery complex on the banks of the Danube in the northern outskirts of Belgrade. A series of detonations that shook the whole city early yesterday sent a toxic cloud of smoke and gas hundreds of feet into the night sky. In the dawn, the choking cloud could be seen spreading over the entire northern skyline. Quote, among the cocktail of chemicals billowing over hundreds of thousands of homes were the toxic gas phosgene, chlorine, and hydrochloric acid. Should have been gases. Phosgene, chlorine, and hydrochloric acid. Workers at the industrial complex in Pančevo panicked and released tons of ethylene dichloride, a carcinogen, into the Danube rather than risk seeing it blown up. At least three missile strikes left large areas of the plant crippled, and oil and petrol from the damaged refinery area flowed into the river, forming slicks up to 12 miles long. Temperatures in the collapsing plant were said to have risen to more than 1,000 degrees centigrade. Asked about the hazard from chemical smoke, NATO said that there was, quote, a lot more smoke coming from burning villages in Kosovo, unquote. Meanwhile, in Pančevo, dozens of people reported suffering from poisoning due to the bombings of refineries, fertilizer facilities, and a vinyl chloride and ethylene plant. Huge quantities of toxic matter such as chlorine, ethylene dichloride, and vinyl chloride monomer were released. Transformer stations were also heavily damaged, and very toxic transformer oil flowed out. The health ministry could not find enough gas masks to distribute. Residents were told to breathe through scarves soaked in sodium bicarbonate as a precaution against showers of nitric acid. By burning down enormous quantities of naphtha and its derivatives, more than 100 highly toxic chemical compounds that pollute water, air, and soil are released, unquote, endangering the entire Balkan ecosystem, said the new Green Party scientist Luka Radoja, R-A-D-O-J-A. Radoja points out that the NATO bombing is happening just as many crops vital for survival are supposed to be planted. Corn, sunflower, soy, sugar beets, and vegetables. As a result, the planting of 2.5 million hectares of land has been halted. The lack of fuel for agricultural machines will have catastrophic results because it leads to hunger of the entire population. When you add to this the poisoning of the water, air, and soil, the catastrophe becomes a cataclysm. As an expert who has spent his entire work age on the fields of this, up until now, ecologically pure part of Europe, I am a witness to the disappearing of the most beautiful garden of Europe, Radoja said sadly. In fact, the ecological crisis only grows worse. With the bombing of petrochemical facilities, NATO's airstrikes have come perilously close to hitting tanks containing tens of thousands of tons of explosive chemicals. According to Miralem Jindo, D-Z-I-N-D-O, one such tank containing 20,000 tons of liquid ammonia was recently grazed by NATO missiles. If that had gone up in flames, much of Belgrade would have been poisoned. The pollution in the Danube and in the atmosphere over Belgrade knows no frontiers. Jindo warned neighboring countries that, quote, the poison clouds could soon be with them, unquote. And that, again, from the London Times of April 19th. Continuing with the article. Indeed, the chief inspector of the Macedonian Ministry of Environment, Miroslav Balaburski, said that furans, F-U-R-A-N-S, and dioxins released by bomb explosions are being carried long distances. The pollution is entering Macedonia by air and by the river Lepenic, L-E-P-N-E-C, which crosses the border between Macedonia and Yugoslavia, according to Zoran Bojanovski, a speaker for the Center for Radioisotopes, a Macedonian government institution based in Skopje. Ivan Grozdanov, a chemist at the center, made the further point that burning aircraft fuel is the primary source for stratospheric nitrogen oxides, which are severely damaging the ozone layer. As Robert Fisk, reporting from Serbia for the London Independent in mid-April, commented, quote, shame on the leader of the French Greens, Daniel Cohn-Bendit, and on Joschka Fischer, the Green Party leader and foreign minister of Germany, who were making this war possible and without whose support the NATO bombardment of Yugoslavia would fall apart. Bombing a civilian population, destroying their water supply, poisoning their crops, this is the green alternative? No. It is the very essence of modern warfare, of advanced technologies specifically designed and utilized to inflict terror and ravage human beings and nature alike for their refusal to accede to the demands of international capital. Unquote. That again, Robert Fisk writing in the London Independent. Last references to the fact that Yugoslavia and Serbia had been relatively recalcitrant to the various international financial regulatory bodies and their demands for privatization, far from being the bastion of Soviet-style communism that some propagandists have made Serbia out and Yugoslavia out to be. In fact, it had been the most Western-oriented of all of the European Marxist nations and had enjoyed pretty cozy relations relationships with the United States and Western Europe. However, it had been relatively resistant to some of the demands for complete privatization. That was the reference that Robert Fisk was making. He also was of course, referring to the green agenda that has surfaced in Europe, and the fact that some exponents of that agenda have been among the leaders in calling for the shedding of blood in what used to be Yugoslavia. In numerous programs about the genesis of the Balkans War, I've talked about the German role. Although U.S. arms and U.S. maneuvering has gotten the most publicity, the fact of the matter is that the war itself was precipitated by Germany, and that Germany's maneuvering vis-a-vis Yugoslavia has been absolutely critical, and it's essential to understand that maneuvering in order to understand the Balkans War itself. I've talked about the German role in that in For the Record segments 48, 147, and 154, among other programs. Also in the 13-part series Reunited Germany, The New Danger, and in our discussions with Martin Lee, the author of the landmark book The Beast Reawakens, I've discussed the profound role of Germany in breaking up Yugoslavia, and also to a lesser extent their role in breaking up Czechoslovakia as well. The German role in setting the international tone for the demonization of the Serbs and for the moral rationalization for military involvement in the Balkans was set by Germany, or Germany's role in helping to create that, was discussed in an article that was carried in Covert Action Quarterly and researched for us by a member of the listening audience. Covert Action Quarterly's issue number 65 from the fall of 1998 carried the following article by Diana Johnstone. It's called Seeing Yugoslavia Through a Dark Glass, subtitled Politics, Media, and the Idea of Globalization. Again, this is from Covert Action number 65 from the fall of 1998. And speaking of the German genesis of the campaign to demonize the Serbs, the current campaign to demonize the Serbs began in July of 1991 with a virulent barrage of articles in the German media, led by the influential conservative newspaper the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, or FAZ. In almost daily columns, FAZ editor Johann George Reismuller, R-E-I-S-M-U-Umlaut-L-L-E-R, justified the freshly and illegally declared, quote, independence, unquote, of Slovenia and Croatia by describing the Yugo-Serbs, unquote, as essentially Oriental militaristic Bolsheviks, unquote, who have no place in the European community, unquote. 19 months after German reunification, and for the first time since Hitler's defeat in 1945, German media resounded with condemnation of an entire ethnic group reminiscent of the pre-war propaganda against the Jews. The German propaganda binge was a signal that times had changed seriously. Only a few years earlier, a seemingly broad German peace movement had stressed the need to put an end to enemy stereotypes or Feindbilder. Yet the sudden, ferocious appearance of the enemy stereotype of the Serbs did not shock liberal or left Germans, who were soon repeating it themselves. It might seem that the German peace movement had completed its historic mission once its contribution to altering the image of Germany had led Gorbachev to endorse reunification. Again, before we continue with the article, note the role that the German peace movement played in German geopolitics and strategic operations. It was the relative, or at least ostensibly virulent, nature of the German peace movement that convinced Gorbachev to go along with the idea of German reunification. Then that German peace movement very quickly metamorphosed into a German war movement, as elements involved with the German peace movement, such as German Green leader Joschka Fischer, the current foreign minister, led the way in the demonization of the Serbs and the call for blood. I would note that Joschka Fischer became the de facto leader of the Greens when Petra Kelly, the best known and most effective Green leader in this period of time, was murdered in the fall of 1992. The German police have never released the report on her murder. So note again the role of the German peace movement in, first of all, paving the way for German reunification, and then metamorphosing into the war movement as the guild for the crimes of the Third Reich was transmogrified into aggression, or the rationalization for aggression against the Serbs. And note the role of Joschka Fischer in the German peace movement and the demonization of the Serbs. Note also the role of the German media. When I talk about the German control over American publishing, the potential for the complete reversal of facts by such a process is something that should not be discounted. Not that American publishers can't and haven't done that themselves. They have, but for a full illumination of that discussion, get a hold of For the Record segments 122 and 123 about German corporate control of American publishing. And note, don't fail to note the role of the media in the German attitude towards Yugoslavia. Continuing with this article, speaking of the German peace movement, Diana Johnstone writes, "The least one can say is that the previous efforts at reconciliation with peoples who suffered from Nazi invasion stopped short when it came to the Serbs. In the Bundestag, German Green leader Joschka Fischer expressed pressed for disavowal of pacifism in order to, quote, combat Auschwitz, unquote, thereby equating Serbs with Nazis. In a heady mood of self-righteous indignation, German politicians across the board joined in using Germany's past guilt as a reason not for restraint, as had been the logic up until reunification, but on the contrary, for bearing their share of the military burden, unquote. In the name of human rights, the Federal Republic of Germany abolished its ban on military operations outside the NATO defensive area. Germany could once again be a, quote, normal, unquote, military power thanks to the, quote, Serb threat, unquote. The near unanimity was all the more surprising in that the enemy stereotype of the Serb had been dredged up from the most belligerent German nationalism of the past. Serbian musht sterbien, a play on the word sterben, to die, meaning Serbia must die, was a famous popular war cry of World War I. Serbs had been singled out for slaughter during the Nazi occupation of Yugoslavia. One would have thought that the younger generation of Germans, seemingly so sensitive to the victims of Germany's aggressive past, would have at least urged caution. Very few did. On the contrary, what occurred in Germany was a strange sort of mass transfer of Nazi identity and guilt to the Serbs. In the case of the Germans, this can be seen as a comforting psychological projection which served to give the Germans a fresh and welcome sense of innocence in the face of the new criminal people, the Serbs. But the hate campaign against Serbs, started in Germany, did not stop there. Elsewhere, the willingness to single out one of the Yugoslav peoples as the villain calls for other explanations. And by the way, it should not fail to be noted that the United States and those Nazi-aligned elements in the U.S. Corporate structure and in the U.S. State Department and National Security Establishment joined with the Germans in the destabilization of Yugoslavia and the subsequent precipitation of hostilities. In a footnote to the passage I just read you, Diana Johnstone goes on to note, "In Washington, the campaign on behalf of Albanian separatists in Kosovo was spearheaded by Representative Joe DiGuardi of New York, after losing his congressional seat in 1988, has continued his lobbying for the cause." By the way, his last name, capital D-I-O, capital G-U-A-R-D-I. Continuing. "An early and influential convert to the cause was Senator Robert Dole. In Germany, the project for the political unification of all Croatian nationalists, both communist and Ustashi, with the aim of seceding and establishing Greater Croatia, was followed closely and sympathetically by the Bundesnachrichtendienst, or BND, West Germany's CIA, which hoped to gain its own sphere of influence on the Adriatic from the breakup of Yugoslavia. The nationalist unification, which eventually brought former communist general Franjo Tudjman to power in Zagreb with the support of the Ustashi diaspora, got seriously underway after Tito's death in 1980, during the years when Bonn's current foreign minister, Klaus Kinkel, was heading the BND. The BND, of course, the German intelligence service, the successor organization to the Reinhard Gehlen Nazi spy outfit, which jumped to the CIA and Western intelligence. After World War II, it eventually wound up as the West German intelligence service. Note that in RFA programs 2 and 36 and 37, we took a look at the German expelle milieu, which has been very supportive in conjunction with German and U.S. intelligence of the Croatian Ustashi fascists from World War II. RFA program FTR segments 48 and 49 talk about that, as does FTR series 50, the Reunited Germany, the New Danger series. Again, that article talking about how perhaps the devastation that we've seen the NATO bombers wreak in Yugoslavia, which obviously in and of itself is greatly divergent from the green agenda, as Robert Fisk noted in the London Independent. Not really so divergent from the agenda that we've seen with the ostensible center-left government in Germany, which I believe, as I've said before, is a front. It wouldn't surprise me one bit if Joschka Fischer was in fact BND, and if he stepped into the breach after the killing of Petra Kelly. Certainly his behavior here, I think, warrants scrutiny, and I think justifies an asking of that question. We've noted in the past, and again, what I'm about to say should in no way be interpreted as excusing any sort of atrocity that the Serbs have committed, but the fact of the matter is that Kosovo, the ethnic Albanians in Kosovo had autonomy. As we looked at in FTR segment 149, they used that autonomy to oppress the Slavic minority, and then Milosevic, who was elected on a hardline, get tough with the Albanians in Kosovo line, withdrew that autonomy. We've also looked in the past at indications of covert operations, in particular German intelligence support for the KLA. It's a pretty safe bet that elements of our intelligence system are in bed with KLA as well. The FTR segments 151 and 153 talk about the KLA and drugs. One of the things to be noted is that the greater Albanian movement, or the pan-Albanian movement, which the KLA is part of, seeks to reunite Kosovo with Albania, and in so doing, to restore a situation that was established briefly during the Second World War. For in a classic exercise of German geopolitics, in order to maintain the control over a very large part of the world, the Germans utilized certain ethnic rivalries. Indeed, all colonial powers have done this. The British did it, the French did it, and the Germans did that in what used to be Yugoslavia. In addition to allying with the Croatian Ustashi fascists that you heard spoken of, they also aligned with the Pan-Albanians. And there was a reference to that in the Los Angeles Times of Monday, June 14th of 1999. This is an article by Marjorie Miller, Julie Tamaki, and Richard C. Paddock of the LA Times, Dateline Prizren, Yugoslavia. Headline, NATO Force Meets Resistance, subtitled, Two Serbs Killed, Russians Bar Allies from Airport. Again, from the LA Times of 6/14/99. And of the Albanian welcome for the German troops now moving into Kosovo, we read, still, it seemed the Germans could do no wrong in the eyes of the ethnic Albanians, many of whom not only welcomed them as a part of a NATO force, but remembered them fondly from World War II. While Hitler razed much of Europe and slaughtered Jews, he allowed Kosovo to unite with Albania, briefly creating the greater Albanian that many Kosovars continue to dream of. That again from the LA Times of 6/14/99. More about reminiscences of the German entry into Kosovo on the part of those who'd seen the Germans enter Kosovo and establish Greater Albania during World War II. This also from the LA Times. This from Thursday, June 17th of 1999. This is an article by Marjorie Miller of the LA Times. It also is datelined Prizren, Yugoslavia. It's headlined, German Force Savers Moral Post-War Debut in the Balkans. Skipping down, the article reads, it is a proud moment for the Germans, but many Kosovo Albanians sided with the Nazis during World War II, and today, some of them do not distinguish between the past and present German armies, both of which, to their way of thinking, accomplished the same feat, freeing them from Serbian rule. This is a second liberation, said Ali Majo, 68, a native of this city in southwestern Kosovo. I can't describe how it felt when we saw German soldiers come to liberate us again, unquote. Skipping down again, Majo was 10 years old when the German Wehrmacht rolled into Prizren in April of 1941. The Nazis arrived in the hills around town on motorcycles, looked through their binoculars, and opened fire on a partisan artillery position, he recalled. After that, they came in and circled the town, unquote, Majo said, again quoting, we all shouted, Heil Hitler! We were proud of the German soldiers because they liberated us from the Serbs, unquote. Naim Poloshka, P-O-L-O-S-H-K-A, 72, remembers how one of the Wehrmacht soldiers gave him a chocolate and a ride on his motorcycle. They drove him around town so he could point out houses where partisans lived. The partisans were the anti-fascist guerrillas in Yugoslavia. Basically, this Naim Poloshka, at the age of 14, was a snitch, basically. Continuing, Like much of Prizren, Polaska was stunned when he awoke one morning to find that the Germans had hanged 9 suspected partisans, 5 Serbs and 4 ethnic Albanians in the center of town overnight. But it did not dampen his enthusiasm for the Nazis. "The enemy of your enemy is your friend," unquote, Polaska said, again quoting, "We were occupied, and they liberated us," unquote. And skipping down the last paragraph, "The German troops are happy to be appreciated and to be able to hold their heads high on a foreign mission that finishes what the leaders of the United States and Britain, their World War II enemies, described as a moral war," unquote. The alleged morality of this war, having come in many ways from the definition and casting of the Serbs as the demons in this particular war. As noted, the Greater Albania that the KLA and other Kosovars dream of was actually established as part of German geopolitics during World War II, and some of the roots of the KLA actually go back to not only the Nazi occupation, but specifically the Skanderberg SS division, a Waffen-SS division that was recruited by the Nazis from among the ethnic Albanians. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience who got this from Foreign Affairs magazine, and this specifically is from Foreign Affairs issue of May and June of 1999. This is an article by Chris Hedges entitled "Kosovo's Next Masters," and Chris Hedges is a fellow at the Nieman Foundation at Harvard University, and he was the Times Balkan chief, New York Times Balkan chief, from 1995 to 1998. And of the genesis of the KLA, we read, "The KLA splits down a bizarre ideological divide with hints of fascism on one side and whiffs of communism on the other. The former faction is led by the sons and grandsons of rightist Albanian fighters, either the heirs of those who fought in the World War II fascist militias and the Skanderberg Volunteer SS division raised by the Nazis, or the descendants of the rightist Albanian Kachak rebels who rose up against the Serbs 80 years ago. Although never much of a fighting force, the Skanderberg Division took part in the shameful roundup and deportation of the province's few hundred Jews during the Holocaust. The division's remnants fought Tito's partisans at the end of the war, leaving thousands of ethnic Albanians dead. The decision by KLA commanders to dress their police in black fatigues and order their fighters to salute with a clenched fist to the forehead has led many to worry about these fascist antecedents. Following such criticism, the salute has been changed to the traditional open palm salute common in the U.S. Army. Remains to be seen what exactly comes of the resolution of the political situation in Yugoslavia and Kosovo. Suffice it to say that most of the peacekeeping force and most of the funds that are going to rebuild Yugoslavia are going to come from the European Union. It'll be interesting to see if German corporations wind up cleaning up in Kosovo. And so far, we're looking rather like it is looking rather like the United States dropped its social security surplus on Yugoslavia to secure the Balkans for Hitler, because the map of that part of the world is meaning Europe and Southern Europe in particular is being redrawn along much the lines that were advocated by Adolf Hitler. Spitfire, Spitfire, P.O. Box 1179. Spitfire's address is P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email spitfire@ix.netcom.com. The Spitfire website, with a list and description of all of the programs available from Spitfire, is www.spitfirelist.com. That concludes this program. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.